You are listening to KPMG Texas Trend Talks, a podcast series featuring KPMG partner Joshua Galvin as he engages with KPMG sector leaders on today's critical business issues.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to our Texas Trend Talks podcast. Today, we are talking the future of mobility. I'm your host, Josh Galvin, and today I'm joined by two special guests from KPMG, Angie Gilday and Gary Silberg. They'll be sharing their insights on this exciting topic, bringing to bear their depth of experience in both automotive and energy. Angie's the national sector leader for energy, natural resources, and chemicals, and Gary is the global head of automotive industry for KPMG. It's great to have you both with us. Thank you so much for being here. I know you're busy and you have a lot of people vying for your time, and I'm grateful to have a bit of it today. We know technology continues to shape the automotive industry, and today we will explore some notable aspects of this, namely the role of software for mobility solutions, charging infrastructure and range of the related mobility solutions out there today, and that might be emerging for tomorrow, and alternative fuels like hydrogen and hybrids, not to mention the energy requirements for serving mobility solutions. So Angie and Gary, as we dive into the discussion, I'd like to table an interesting statistic or two first. According to the KPMG American Perspective Survey of 1,100 American consumers, only one-fifth of American consumers surveyed say they'd opt for an EV over a gas-powered or hybrid vehicle if the prices and features were comparable. Regional preferences do vary, with hybrids being favored by 43% on the West Coast, and standard gas-powered vehicles are the preferred choice for 40% in the Midwest and 37% in the Northeast. That's quite a revealing set of statistics to me. So given these numbers, what are your initial high-level reactions to what would appear to be regional differences in consumer preferences, and how do you think this impacts the future strategies for the automotive industry? Angie, you want to go first? Any initial reactions?
Sure. You know, there were a couple of components to this American Perspective Survey and that you mentioned, and I'll hit on a few of them. One is, given all things equal, price and features, 20% prefer EVs. And then the regional differences that you see in terms of the type of automobile that folks would prefer based on their geography. The second one, to me, just underscores how we see the energy transition playing out. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Gary likes to say it's a mosaic of solutions. We see that. The one thing that was a little surprising to me, and this will be interesting to dive in with Gary, was a lot of what is out there is that it's the price of the EVs that are too high. So if it was equal, then people would be more apt to purchase an EV. That was really telling to me, because if it was equal, you still only had 20% that would prefer EVs. To me, that speaks to what we say in the energy sector, that consumers want reliability, affordability, and sustainability. And you have to have all of those. It's not just about affordability. It's also reliability, and then, of course, sustainability. So that was a little bit surprising to me, and I'm interested to dive into that more, but I'll pass to Gary to get his initial perspectives as well.
Well, thanks, Angie and Josh. It's great to be an honorary Texan, by the way, letting me on your show. So thank you, by the way. I do love Texas. Hey, what I would say on this, I think, Angie, you hit the first point, which is the affordability. This question was all else equal if they were the same. And I think in the consumer's mind, and this is very important, the first inning products was what I was using a baseball analogy, if you will, were very expensive. And not only were they expensive, they didn't deliver outside primarily of Tesla and maybe some of the new startups, what they promised to deliver. So I think when you have a new product come out that is the second most expensive purchase you'll make as a consumer outside your home, you are wary of doing something you've heard some perhaps not great things about. And I think there's a little bit of trepidation out there when you, even if it was all else equal, that the consumer, or I should say it this way, the automakers are going to have to change that perception. And that's not easy to do. It will take time to do that. The other comment I thought was interesting, and Angie, you hit on it, all else equal, it's 20% would prefer an EV. But today's market right now is around 7 to 8% of new EV sales are battery electric. which would say that your ceiling could double to 20, but that's a long way out, right? I mean, perhaps we'll see what people think about 20. Government studies and a lot of projections in terms of investment from automakers and planners thought it was going to be close to 50% of the market by 2030. And this is this massive disconnect. I think you have originally the affordability issue. These were expensive toys for rich people. Quite frankly, they are, and they're coming down in price. The perception of the first inning quality. And then you have planning that was way out here. So there's a disequilibrium in the market. And I think, as we say, those consumers are quite smart, and you can call them pesky or what you want, but I think the market's speaking loud and clear. And I'm not surprised at all by the survey, quite frankly, not surprised at all.
Gary, to me, one of the opportunities that I saw was a better education for consumers of perhaps some of the secondary features or benefits that you might get from an EV. And I'll give you an example. Josh and I live in Texas. It's very hot in the summertime. And one of the most miserable things is to come out to a hot car when you're about to leave. Now, with an EV, you can actually set your settings to where you have a consistent climate temperature of 72 degrees. You can't really do that with a combustible engine because the engine's got to run. But with an EV, the battery can just come on and cool the car. I don't know that the consumers really understand that that's a potential feature that an EV has. There's another feature around perhaps not having to stop at nighttime and fill up. And as a female, that's something, you know, I know women are very potentially concerned about. Again, I'm not sure that those features, secondary features of EVs are really out there for the American consumer. So I'm curious on your thoughts of that.
No, I think you're right. In fact, to the contrary, I think most people are worried about range anxiety. And I mean, that's what people anchor on because, you know, when you buy a car that is so expensive that you have to rely on, the worries come out. And I agree with you on the educational side and the software side of what these vehicles can do for you. The one you mentioned in Texas, obviously, with the heat is the cooling factor of that. What I would agree with you, Angie, is from for sure on the educational side of this with the software within the vehicle, what is it capable of doing? Which, what you said, you can even do that remotely, right? You can do it on your phone. You can push a button and you can decide what you want the temperature to be before you even walk into the vehicle. There are so many other tremendous opportunities from the AI and the music within the car. Within my EV, I won't name the brand, but it's a pretty phenomenal EV where I can talk to my car and I can say, turn on the windshield wiper, turn off the windshield wiper, take me here. Take me there. And it does it. It's really unbelievable experience. And the power of the software and the computer within the vehicles, primarily right now EVs, this will come to ICE products eventually, is amazing. But most consumers don't see that. Most consumers don't see that at all. I completely agree with you.
There's another aspect around the maintenance. I was talking to a individual. I too have an EV, and I've had a few of them over here. I've had a guy come out and service my car. And that's the other potential benefit is you don't necessarily have to take your car to a dealership. So the individual's in my driveway and I'm asking him about the service of an EV compared to a gasoline powered car. And he said he used to work for a major automotive dealership. And when someone would bring their car in, they would plug it into a computer that told them problems. And he said there were over 700 permutations of what the problem could be. And he now works for an EV. And he said there's 15 different possibilities. And all but about five of them, we can reset online with the software reboot. The other five, we actually have to come out and visit. So I think that back to your features, and you've got to get the reliability. People want the reliability, absolutely, for sure. But just from an overall maintenance standpoint, there are some potential benefits as well.
Yeah. And on that, Angie, it's a good point, actually, because when I think about the advanced software that, to use the term that we've used, that must exist or be installed in these machines for them to work, maybe the software is to thank for being able to quickly diagnose what might be going on with the car. Maybe it's that the engine that drives the machine is simpler, but how do automakers compete on creating that more cutting edge, innovative, feature laden, but also tightly tuned into the vehicle software now, when they're not really software makers? How are the automakers staying apace of this?
Well, Josh, and I think that question, going back to the original question of what I gave the analogy of this first inning vehicles, they haven't done a good job, to be honest with you. Certain automakers, and I don't want to name names, have been phenomenal at it. And they're the ones who've been at it the longest, that have designed the car from the ground up with hardware and software working together. Others have done it for the first time, and you, again, and this is, I think, goes back to the original survey, have heard some horror stories about the software not working well. For example, I've heard two different automakers at the end of last year gave over-the-air updates in the winter, and I guess the electrons didn't move properly when the cold weather in certain areas, and the over-the-air update actually did not work. It stopped in a certain part of it. And you know how you get an update on your PC and it says, you know, that big warning, do not turn off your PC, right? You know, that big scary thing. Well, imagine this is your car and all of a sudden it freezes. Okay. The entire vehicle didn't work. And this was happening not just for one automaker, but a couple automakers. And then one, when they just designed the vehicle, had so many problems that the rating agency said it was the worst recall they've ever seen in the history of the auto industry, and they were all software problems. I don't want to name names, but I mean, these were some very, very bad stories, okay? And you think about it, if you're driving a vehicle, it's 60 miles an hour, or 70, or 80, or however fast you're going, your car may have to reboot while you're driving. I mean, and you go online and read these stories, people get scared, okay? And I think this is what I meant early on, is that there were some problems and are still some problems, certainly with the software within the vehicle, that are scaring consumers, and rightfully so. There are certain automakers who have gotten this down and have a phenomenal lead on their competitors. And I think it's really the legacy players with the lack of talent or learning versus the ones who have started from scratch that are really computer focused from the very, very beginning.
And speaking of road trips and extended ranges of mobility, let's switch to this range anxiety concept in charging infrastructure. What can we anticipate in terms of the innovations around charging infrastructure, let alone batteries, battery life, battery size, battery weight? Sorry for all the emphasis on battery, but we know there's limits there. But what can we anticipate is evolving tomorrow, let alone 3 to 5 years from now, around charging infrastructure?
Well, I think there's two parts to this range anxiety, and you hit on them. One is the size of the battery, the capacity of the battery. The other is the charging network and charging infrastructure. From a battery side, we're seeing batteries continuing to evolve and have higher and higher range as part of those. I think, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act that was part of the government incentives, a bipartisan act passed by Congress to provide incentives on alternative energies, clean energies, there was a component there around batteries. So I think as we see investments continuing to be made in this area, you're going to see batteries continue to get larger and larger. So that's not from a capacity size. So I think that's going to potentially sort itself out over time. The other question is around the charging infrastructure. And there's a couple of different challenges there. First is, do you have the chargers in the right places where you need them when you need them? And I'll tell you, you know, having a network covering West Coast of California is a very different problem to solve than having a charging infrastructure that covers Wyoming to Nebraska. I mean, it's a very different mindset. So back to this, the energy transition is going to evolve in different areas, different geographies at different paces. That might be one reason for that. There is an aspect around where you put the chargers, connecting the chargers, It's a challenge for power utility companies. And it's a challenge because we have to evolve our U.S. electrical grids, and we have three main grids in the U.S. We have to evolve those to modernize them, not only to handle excess energy capacity, not just from EVs, but from supercomputing demand, et cetera. But we also have to evolve our grid to handle things like more severe weather events. And so if you have a limited set of capital as a power utility company, you have some decisions to make. Do you bury power lines and make your grid more resilient from wildfires and hurricanes? Do you put your resources towards, you know, building in chargers? You've got to interconnect. We've got renewables coming online. So it's a very complicated question. And you have to make sure you're doing it in a way that's the best use of capital, it's the best use for your community, and that you're doing it in ways where everyone benefits. To focus just on the economic areas where there's more EVs doesn't necessarily address some of the challenges that other communities have when there's power outages due to storms. So it's a complicated problem that's going to have to be a lot of thought and effort put into it over time.
It's an interesting perspective, especially I think with the constraints of capital that they have and where they have to invest, especially with AI and supercomputing and what you described. I think specifically though in automotive, one of the tricky things is today's EV ranges are, as we've talked about, outside a few manufacturers are not very good, but the next generation product are pretty damn amazing. And the range that you will get in 3 years from now that you get today will be significantly better, and will get better over time. So we're on the cusp of having longer range battery electric vehicles. We don't have them today, at least not in all brands, but we will over time. So when you think about where do you need to put your charging stations, how many do you need? This is a tricky question because battery chemistry is changing, the supercharging and how quickly you can charge. We've never done this. It's certainly not in the electric side. So I think it's a very complex question from a utility perspective. The other thing I would say, and you mentioned it early on, Angie, what you were saying as a woman and where you charge and reliability, software in this area really matters too. And first of all, can you trust your software today to tell you what your actual range is going to be when you actually get to point A to point B? I hate to break the news to our listeners here, but a lot of the software out there is not very good, and you can have massive variability in terms of what it told you you're going to have in terms of range than you actually got. And in fact, I've heard horror stories of the old, whoops, and you could have 50 to 70 to even 100 miles difference in terms of actual range. Why? Because the software was wrong. It didn't understand the topography. It didn't understand the heat or the cold. I mean, there's a lot of variability that goes into this that I think, again, going back to consumers and charging stations, the software really matters. And then lastly, I would just say on that point is even if you get to the charging station, can you trust it that it will actually work? And today's answer is no. There's terrible, horrible horror stories, but it's closed. This one doesn't work. And you're like, oh my gosh, I only have this amount of range left and it doesn't work. I mean, this is what the things that scare people. And I think the utilities, the infrastructure, it will get better over time. I'm very confident in that. If one thing I'm most confident in is the market to solve this, but it's very expensive. It's unclear when you get a return on invested capital because it's unclear how many vehicles are going to be purchased, when they're going to be purchased. And there's a lot of variability and risk in terms of this equation. So it's something that, you know, at the end of the day, people will invest, but not everywhere all the time. And it just makes it more difficult for a consumer to make a choice.
That's something I'm really going to be watching how this evolves, Gary, is the maintenance and reliability of the charging stations. Who owns that? Is that an EV company, a car company that has their own charger. We see that model out there, and they've actually then licensed some of their chargers out to other automakers. Is it a electrical provider, a power utility that owns and maintains the charging stations, or is it a third party? So I think there's different business models out there that will probably evolve over time. So that'll be something to definitely watch going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm an optimist, by the way, and I love all these new business models. I think one of the great mistakes the auto industry made over the years is they compartmentalized themselves as selling a car once. They forgot, and they could have done gas stations and oil, but they gave that to the oil industry, and they don't sell insurance. They gave that to the insurance industry. And you can think about the compartmentalization of different industries. And I think going forward, we have a chance to see something completely different. Tesla, for example, as you were probably alluding to, is the one that has created the charging stations and licensed it out. Are they going to be the new Standard Oil of EV charging, right? They're also doing insurance now, and we'll see if they license other software. So I think the future will look significantly different than it does today. I'm actually quite optimistic. I think the new business models, the new players, it's going to be pretty damn amazing, to be honest with you.
Thank you both for those perspectives. Before we shift to hydrogen, I just wanted to ask a question, which is, we've talked about charging stations, which is an installation of a piece of equipment where you plug in and it's plugged in and it's plugged in to sources of electricity, et cetera. How far-fetched are other mechanisms for recharging batteries on the highway, on the freeway, at a stoplight, with a magnet or PV cells in the paint flake? I'm just curious, how far-fetched is any of that as alternative mechanisms for charging?
Well, I can tell you that just with regenerative braking, the innovation within the motor, reversing the motor is unbelievable. And there is absolutely, in Europe, they're trying to do this. There's parts of the United States, I know, different highways will allow you to charge actually while you're driving on the freeway. So there's a lot of quite fascinating technologies that people are looking at in this area. This is my personal bias, as Angie alluded to in the beginning. I believe there's going to be a mosaic of powertrains going forward. You're going to have electric vehicles. You'll have hybrids. The internal combustion engine is not going away for the next 10, 20, 30 years. So they're all going to live together. And we'll talk about these other ones like hydrogen and perhaps others. But to me, you could even have fusion. Nuclear fusion is not necessarily that far out if we get a couple of things. You know, we saw what happened, or we can maybe talk about it, the Livermore National Laboratories, and we've had positive net fusion, and there's a lot of startups. So I think in 5, 10, 15 years from now, we may look at powertrains and like, wow, okay, there may be different combinations that we never thought about, especially with artificial intelligence and what compute power might bring us in the future. So I think it's dangerous to anchor in on just EVs. I think that's not the right way to look at the world. I think a mosaic, and that mosaic will continue to grow with different types of powertrains and different types of technology, one of which might be automatic charging. You probably charge your phone when you put it in your car. Now you don't plug it in anymore, right? I mean, we've got a lot of innovative people in this country, and in Texas especially. How about I'll give it Texas a plug?
Technology and the feasibility, I don't think it's going to be the barrier. I'm confident, and as Gary's mentioned, there's prototypes and things out there already. The real question is going to be the commercialization and the cost. Because remember, reliability, affordability, sustainability. So whatever we do, we have to get it to a cost that's palpable to the American consumer.
So any brief final views on things like hydrogen? We'd love to hear where we think that might be heading, and what are the industry dynamics to consider?
Yeah, I think hydrogen, you know, from our perspective within KPMG, hydrogen is certainly a possibility. It's probably more of a solution for the industrial usage and for trucking and things like that. The cost, right now, the challenge with hydrogen is the cost, particularly when you're talking about a green hydrogen. That's the challenge with hydrogen. Hybrids are a wonderful alternative, although, you know, there is some that feel that that's not going far enough, that we need to do much more than hybrid, but hybrids is an alternative. But hydrogen, I think it's more for the large, the trucking, the industrial use. That's just my perspective right now, given where we are from a cost and a commercialization standpoint.
It's interesting on hydrogen. It's the first element in the periodic table. It's the lightest. And it's very hard to manufacture it. We have to take it from H2O. We got to get rid of the two O's, or you can get from CH4, which is methane. You can get rid of one carbon, get four hydrogen. It's very expensive to manufacture hydrogen, although it's abundant. And as Angie was talking about, to make green hydrogen is not so easy. That said, I think it will be one of the mosaic powertrains that we will have in the future. I'm very confident about it. And I think the industrial side, trucking, as Angie, you just said, I agree with that. You're already seeing that happening today. I was in Japan 6 or 7 weeks ago. Massive amounts of investment has gone on in Japan in hydrogen. In Korea, you have seen this, and they've made some very nice advancements. And what I think in terms of, there's a couple fabulous Israeli startups making green hydrogen that I've seen. And I think you got to realize that in 5 to 10 years from now, especially like I said before, with massive computing power that we're going to have access to, we have artificial intelligence, we're on the cusp of really using to help model these molecules. We may even have quantum computing that will help us 5, 10 years from now. There's no reason why the market won't be able to create a hydrogen solution, as Angie, you like to say, in a sustainable way, but an affordable way that you can rely on going forward. So I think the answer is an absolute yes. It will be part of this mosaic of powertrains going forward.
And I think it would be remiss also not to highlight the progress we've made around sustainable fuels and biofuels. I mean, this is something that for the last, you know, several years, many of the energy companies of today have been working hard on creating a lower carbon, more sustainable fuel source. And you have refineries right now that are producing biofuels, sustainable diesel fuels, things like that. So really what we want is we want products that have a lower amount of carbon. And if you can get low or zero carbon diesel, that's okay too, perhaps from a solution standpoint.
No, the last thing I was at, I was in Brazil. If you've been to Brazil, you'll see sugar cane everywhere. And they use sugar cane for their flex fuels. And it is unbelievable how they use that. And that's their, you know, sugar ethanol. I mean, that's how they have their flex fuels there. And it's incredibly reliable. It's very affordable. And customers love it. And I heard India might go that way. I mean, it's a big world we live in. Like I said before, I think this idea of mosaics of powertrains. And the last comment I'll make is I think you'll see even combinations come together that we can't really foresee, where you could have like a flex fuel to power an electric battery, or you could have hydrogen, obviously now that makes electric vehicles. So you could have different permutations and even combinations that we can't even project today with the different types of powertrains and fuels. So it's pretty cool. It's very cool, actually, time.
So Gary, it strikes me, just as the energy companies, an oil and gas company, for instance, or a power utility company, is having to plan their business based on different sources of energy, you know, putting in lower carbon solutions along with their traditional businesses and kind of planning for that future. It strikes me that automakers might have to do very much the same. I mean, for how many years they have been building a product based on a consistent input that you use in an ICE combustible engine. Like, now, how are automakers thinking about variability among that aspect? I'm sure it's a challenge from a planning standpoint.
Oh, it is the most difficult challenge. Not enough money on planet Earth to be able to invest in all of it and be awesome at every one of those technologies. They were monolithic. They had one for 100 years. And now they're faced with, wow, what do we do? Do we do battery electric only? Do we do partly? Do we do hybrid? What about hydrogen? What about flex fuels? I mean, it is very complex. And I think what you will see in the auto industry, you'll have your peer players do specific, you know, your especially your startups and your battery electric. And I think what you'll also see with the other automakers and their suppliers, by the way, because the supplier network was set up essentially to do for 100 years to support the ICE engine. I think you're going to see a lot of consolidation in the industry. You're going to see partnerships that will surprise you. You're like, whoa, these two companies are getting together. Why on earth would they? And then you'll think about it. They'll need to get together for economies of scale. They'll need to get together for technology reasons. I even think you could see battery electric startups that may need capital. And lo and behold, you'll have somebody even from outside the industry that may buy into this. Who the heck knows? But there's not enough money on planet Earth to pay for all these technologies. It is the most difficult planning decision because these companies have to get a return on invested capital, and they don't know what demand is going to be, and they don't know the timing of when these technologies are going to be affordable, reliable, et cetera. I think it's an exciting time, but trust me, there's already going to be a shakeout in the industry. And we haven't mentioned the Chinese at all on this, but the Chinese automakers in EVs have a massive cost advantage, excess capacity that will cause draconian potentially issues around the globe in terms of being able to make profits in these areas, which creates a whole other group of tensions. So this is not for the faint-hearted. It's exciting, it's fun, but you'll see a shakeout in the auto industry. You will.
We're seeing something similar for energy companies. And I think those that are leading the pack, we're seeing them do a couple of things that are distinct. One is they've got some investments in order just to learn. They're putting some bets in some areas where they think the technologies could advance, and they're really trying to learn. They're doing partnerships, like you mentioned, and leaving really that innovative aspect to the partnership, but trying to develop those so they can take advantage of some of the learnings. And then we're seeing companies really make decisions around where they think they can be differentiated. So rather than sort of spreading the peanut butter and trying to place your bets across the board, could you really be a leader, given your current capabilities, your strengths, could you really be a leader in solar or wind, or are you a leader in hydrogen and carbon capture or maybe geothermal? So those are how we're seeing the energy space play out. And the strategies are different for different companies.
It's beautiful to hear that. And I hear that in the auto industry too. Executing that and making it happen is so hard for legacy companies. It's very, very difficult. And my bet, similar to the auto industry, is you're going to have clear winners and losers like you just described in the energy sector too. I think that's what's going to happen. The ones that figure this out, learn, adapt, partner, et cetera, will be the winners. And it's definitely going to be a different world. It's very cool. They're almost like mirror opposites of each other at the same time, having to grapple with all this change and transformation. It's also pretty cool.
So where can listeners find more information on a few of these topics?
Yeah, from an energy standpoint, I referenced the American Perspective survey that was just released by KPMG. So I think you'll put links to your listeners there. That's a really good one to get a sense across all sectors where consumers are, feelings and insights are. The second one that I'll highlight is the Energy Institute is releasing the Statistical Review of World Energy. That will be released on June the 27th. And so that is something that KPMG is a partner with. The Energy Institute, that was formerly BP's Statistical Review of World Energy that they did for over 70 years and is a very trusted source around how the mix of energy is changing over time and what the outlook's like.
And from an automotive perspective, I'll give you a few to read. One I think is very important and salient to this discussion is titled The Future of Powertrains, Place Your Billion-Dollar Bets Wisely. And it's a description of a future world 5, 10, 15 years from now, which is this mosaic of powertrains and what your strategies need to be in that area. The other one I would ask you to read is called Automotive's New Ice Age. It's a play on words from the internal combustion engine to the internal computing engine. And it's a story about supercomputers on wheels and computing power and why those electrons going at 50 trillion operations per second will change the world and how it will change the auto industry and certainly powertrains. And lastly, we do our annual automotive executive survey. You can click, you can play with the data. It's super fun to hang out with the data if you're a geek like me. And I think many of you love data. It's 1,100 executives from around the globe. It's 40 questions. The auto survey is fun, interesting, and it addresses many of these topics that we discussed today.
Well, Angie, Gary, thank you so much for being here today and an information-packed 30-plus minutes about the future of mobility. Clearly, it's going to be a convergence of a lot of different things that get us to the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. I heard about innovation and technology and partnerships and economy and global competition and all of these things that I guess make business fun. Really grateful for your time today. I know you're both very busy. I know our listeners will be grateful for this time listening to the podcast as well. And so those of you tuning in, please join us for the next Texas Trend Talks. We look forward to issuing another episode later in the summer of 2024. So be well and have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Texas Trend Talks with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to hear the latest from Texas business leaders and receive notification of new episodes.